I'm excited today because we get to talk about a subject that the whole world is talking about right now. And that is Hamas and Israel. What's happening in the Middle East? Now, there's lots and lots of stuff going on. If you're a millennial, you've lived through a housing crash, you've lived through a virus, you've lived through two separate wars, and now we've got Ukraine and Israel happening all at the same time. It seems like for the past 10 years or so, that there's just been constant tension. And social media has really pumped up the flames of anything that happens all around the world. You see all over your feed, you see it everywhere. You see the protests that are happening in the streets, the people that are protesting for Palestine, which I think is hilarious and ignorant. But we'll get to that in just a second. What I want to come to you guys with first and foremost, and it doesn't matter what you think about the state of Israel, what we have in Israel, first and foremost, and I've been there, visited there, is the only real democracy in the Middle East. So politically, if you're just looking at it politically, what you're looking at is probably the only truly free place to live in all of the Middle East. That's part of the reason the United States supports them, and it's part of the reason, as a Christian, that you should actually support them as well. If you haven't been before, and you have lots of opinions, things about things like this, it's really funny to me. Things like this, there's a lot of experts all of a sudden. There's a lot of people that haven't been there. There's a lot of people that haven't read the history of Israel. There's a lot of people that don't know the history of Israel. Ask about the 10 Days War. Ask about 1967. Ask about the Yom Kippur War. Ask about 1947. Ask about all those things first before you even start to have a conversation with someone about Israel. Because I think people want your opinion on something, maybe. But the reality of it is we don't have a clue what it's actually like on the ground. So the first question that I pose to people is, so this crazy attack happens. So it doesn't necessarily matter how many people died. I know a lot of people throw out the numbers. It's how this took place. So you have Hamas members that have been watching and watching and watching and watching these little villages. They're like communal villages on the outskirts of Israel. These are the places that actually got attacked. So there's these little communal villages. And what happens is you have Palestinians coming in, usually on a daily basis. They have visas to come in through the gates to come work in Israel. Why? Because it's a 50% unemployment rate in Palestine. Why is there a 50% unemployment rate? Because Hamas runs Palestine. They're not interested in industry. They're not interested in the people that actually live there. These people are a tool and a proxy for Iran and other nations to actually try and destroy Israel. So these guys fly in, and the famous thing is the hang gliders. and people are even getting t-shirts with hang gliders on them because they don't understand that once these people landed, they started murdering women and children. I've watched multiple videos on this, and the mentality behind Hamas, the whole mentality behind Hamas, is the destruction of Israel. Now, it's really hard to have opinions on this until you've experienced something like it yourself, which I have not. But what if in your life there's an existential threat? So a lot of people call for ceasefire. They call for the end of conflict in Israel. They call to Israel, who everyone knows is the older, more responsible brother, to stop invading Gaza, the Gaza Strip. I find this hilarious because if you experience anything like, let's say, a home invasion, there's someone that breaks into your house. This is a really simple way to look at it. Someone breaks into your house, they are armed, and all they want to do is destroy you, everyone in the house. They want to look up the information for the rest of your family and everywhere they live and kill all of them. That is Hamas' stated goal. It's not like what they do sometimes. It's not like what they think they might do at some point. Their stated goal is the complete destruction of the state of Israel. That's their stated goal. So if someone breaks into your house and their stated goal is to destroy your entire family, and someone calls you from across the country, that you don't even know, and you pick up the phone and they say, hey, I heard someone's broken into your house that wants to murder you. You know what you should do? You should ask for a ceasefire. You should tell them really nicely that, you know, everything's going to be fine. We'll go back to the way things were. And right in front of you, they're slaughtering your wife and your children. Now, everyone says, well, it's complicated. Well, it's complicated. Here's the thing. When it comes to geopolitics like this, when it comes to a terrorist organization trying to make incursions into Israel, when it comes to how they attack, they didn't attack IDF bases. They didn't make a military attack against Israel. What they did was kill Jews, as many Jews as they could possibly kill in the time that they had. It took 5 or 6 hours for the IDF to respond. Now, there's a lot of questions that people have about that because it's one of the most secure borders in the whole world, and everyone goes right into conspiracy theories. But all we have is the information that we have. And the reality is over 1,200 Jewish people are dead, many of them women and children. Many of them are babies, actual babies. And that gives Israel absolutely no choice as to whether or not to respond and respond in force. Israel hasn't been united as you may have thought in the last 20 years. Hamas has found a way to unite the whole nation behind eradicating this threat. And also what you have in the Gaza Strip is hundreds of miles of tunnels underground, which they use child labor to actually dig out. Again, there's a 50% unemployment rate. The only job is tunnels. Any support that comes in from other nations through the ports in Egypt goes directly into Hamas's hands, and they use it as leverage to control families, to control people, and to manage the populace. Now, why did the Palestinians choose Hamas? Well, I don't know how many options they actually had. And is it really voting if you have a gun to your head? Are you really voting for someone if you're under threat of death and everyone knows you voted for the wrong people and then people show up to your house and make you disappear? That's not real voting. Now, when it comes to the prophetic aspect of this, there's a lot of prophetic words popping around. There's a lot of prophetic ideas floating around. Why? Because it's a hot topic. I feel like there's an industry in the prophetic world that when things happen in the world, it's like, oh, I said this first, or oh, I was talking about this already. It's like, this is my word. This is my word. This is my word. Be careful who you read and be careful what you get ginned up about. Because here's my concern with the whole situation. We are, in a lot of cases, if you just look at it practically, when it comes to the United States and the financial strain that we're under, when you look at China and Taiwan, the possibility there, when you look at Russia and Ukraine, and then you look at the open war that's actually taking place in Israel and Gaza right now, there hasn't been a time in our lives where there's been more potential for an actual World War III to pop off. Now, what we don't understand about this and what people need to be cognizant of is that there are multiple nuclear armed nations involved in every single one of these conflicts. Israel is nuclear armed, Russia is nuclear armed, China is nuclear armed, the United States is nuclear armed. Now, that may seem like it keeps us from killing each other all off, but the potential, if a nation is under a real existential threat, like everything is falling apart, to use weapons of mass destruction, and I mean real mass destruction. We have no idea what these actually look like. Hiroshima, Nagasaki are drops in the bucket to compared to what nations are capable of now. I think we need to be careful of supporting continued escalation. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, should the United States support Israel? I think so. Yes, they're the only democracy in the Middle East. Should the United States support Ukraine? That one, I'm not so sure about. How many wars should we actually be involved in? How much should we be bankrolling when we have problems at home? And the border is more porous than it's ever been before. 6 million people in the last few years. If you're looking for a way to approach this in a biblical and Christian manner, what we need to realize is humble ourselves and be thankful for what the Jews have done as giving us a foundation for our Christianity. Why does Hamas want to destroy Israel? This is why you can get passionate about this to a degree. Why does Hamas want to destroy Israel? Hamas wants to destroy Israel because they need to destroy the idea of God. They need to destroy the idea of Yahweh. They need to remove it from the face of the earth. Every nation around them does. That's why China just removed Israel from their maps on the internet in China, because China agrees with Hamas that the idea of God itself, himself, needs to be completely eradicated. Needs to be completely eradicated. Why? Because other gods are in competition, or they think they're in competition with Yahweh. Now, the Jews will survive. Israel will survive in the end. But you can see this conflict not just in one corner of the world. You can see this conflict in lots of different places. So what can you do at home? The idea of God wants to be eradicated here in the United States by what? By secular humanism and by Marxism that we see in our schools, that they're training our kids with, the idea of people being made in the image of God. And where does the idea of God reside in the United States? It resides in the family. The division and breaking up of the family is what that spirit actually wants to do. It wants to destroy the idea of God that resides within the family in the United States. They'll attack the church, yes, but many churches aren't even necessarily preaching the gospel these days. What they want to do is eradicate inside the family the ability for Christians to continue to believe what they believe and walk through the difficulty that they need to walk through to keep the faith and test themselves to see that they're in the faith. So you can see this as a two-front war spiritually. It's not just happening in Israel. Usually things are happening in the spirit, obviously, and then end up happening on the ground, and we see the conflict take place in human warfare. This God, Allah, wants to destroy the idea of Yahweh. It is not the same God. He's not a personal God. He's not a saving God. And if you have read the Quran at all, you'll realize this God is almost schizophrenic. He has lots and lots of issues. And he's mostly angry. And you have no idea whether or not you have assurance of salvation. But what you do have one assurance in that religion is if you die as a martyr, you're awarded with 40 virgins or 70 virgins or 1,000 virgins in heaven. I think it's 70 virgins in heaven, which is just insane. I think for many of us, we're looking at this Israel conflict like it directly attaches to us. In some ways it does. In some ways it actually directly attaches to your daily life. When it comes to the prophetic, we have no idea when Jesus is actually going to come back. So a lot of prophets out there are like, this is the end, this is the end, this is the end. Yes. But what you have to realize is that when Rome fell, and when Rome completely fell, it was a Christian empire at the time. Those people thought the world was going to end. In recent history, World War I, do you think those people thought the world was going to end in Europe? Absolutely. World War II? Absolutely. All the rationing, all the effort, everything that had to go into it, people were thinking this could be the end as well. Now, when this other great conflict comes, which great conflicts always come, this will be fought in a completely different way. What we want is some General George Patton to go over there, roll in with tanks and say, take them over, kill all the Hamas people. But everything is fought not unilaterally anymore, but through proxies. And what we need to understand is that everything that we're fighting right now, everything that we're doing, even when it comes to Israel, when it comes to Ukraine, when it comes to China, when it comes to Marxism and secular humanism at home, everything is a war of ideas. Every single thing is a war of ideas. It's all hearts and minds. It's all hearts and minds. So as a believer, as a Christian, if you're actually following Jesus, your job is to win the hearts of people. Proverbs says really clearly, he who's wise who wins souls, right? So our job is to expand the church, expand the kingdom, see it move forward, see God work in signs, power, and wonders, see miracles actually take place, see salvations actually take place, and then focus on raising our family with the right ideas so that if everything does crumble and if everything does fall apart, which is definitely possible, it's happened multiple times in history, right? We're not exempt from everything falling apart. We're not exempt from food shortages. We're not exempt from gas shortages. We're not exempt from all those things. We've just been really comfortable for a really long time. I'm not a doomsday prophet at all. But the extent to which all these wars are taking place, the extent to which we're buried financially, the extent to which those things are taking place, the extent to which people have lost all reasonability when it comes to having public discourse, all those things, the fact that we don't trust our elections anymore, neither side trusts their elections, those are all historical signs of things falling apart rather rapidly. Now, what do you do in that instance if you're a Christian? Well, first of all, you should already be in a local church. And if you're not, you're going to need one real quick because you're going to need a group of people that you walk this out with. The second thing is look after your family. Teach your family the right ideas about who Jesus is, about the Imago Dei, about who people actually are, how valuable people actually are. Teach your family that it's important to pray for people even like Hamas. And how do you pray for people like Hamas? This is how I would pray for Hamas. I pray that as many of them get saved, get met by the man in white, as in their dreams has been happening in the Middle East many, many times, Jesus visiting people in their dreams. And if they don't repent, I pray that God destroys his enemies, that he eradicates them from the earth, that evil is eradicated, that good men would stand up and resist evil. If it comes to actual armed conflict, then that actually needs to take place. But for you at home that aren't going to sign up and go fight in the IDF, if you're not a Jew that can fly over there and get your citizenship and jump in the fight, prayer is really important. Pray for the preservation of Israel, not just because they're God's chosen people and they have promises in the Bible, but pray for them so that we have an anchor in the Middle East to go from to see people saved, so that the gospel can go out from the Middle East. Pray for the salvation of the Jews. What a lot of people don't know about Israel is that there's Orthodox people there. There's a lot of tourist attractions there that are hyper-religious. But a lot of the nation is actually agnostic. They actually don't necessarily believe in a active, involved God, and that is sad. That is brutally sad. God's chosen people, he gave them this nation out of nowhere through the victories that we won in World War II. And what you fail to realize, what many people fail to realize, is that Israel just needs to be saved. Not just militarily at this point, but many of the people there just need to be saved. And I think there's a great revival coming amongst the Jews, and before the end, there will be a great revival amongst the Jewish people, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited for the roots that will come with it. I'm excited for the promises that attaches us to. I'm excited for people to get saved. I'm excited for God's people to come back to him. If they're the older brother or the younger brother in the story, I'm excited for them to come back to him. I mean, there's two large Jewish cities in the world, and one is New York and one is Israel. So if you really love Israel, go to New York and start ministering to Jewish people there. Start seeing people saved in Christ. Start explaining to people how Jesus is actually their Messiah. And when it comes to the war, that what's actually taking place, my personal opinion, and this doesn't necessarily have to be the opinion of every single person in our church, they can believe what they want to believe about this, but I think what it's revealed is how much anti-Semitism actually exists all around the world. We saw protests in London. We saw protests in Sydney. We saw protests in New York. We saw protests in LA. What did we see? Something that would have shocked us 10 years ago. People going out and saying, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. What do they mean when they say that? That sounds nice. That sounds pretty. Be careful what language you listen to. And you're like, oh yeah, Palestinians actually should be free. Well, there's over 40 Arab nations surrounding them and they're not taking them. I find that really, really interesting. The other part about this is that phrasing, what they're actually saying, means the eradication of the state of Israel and the eradication of the Jews. They don't mean freedom. They mean the death of an entire people group, which Israel has never had in their game plan, which Israel has no plans whatsoever to eradicate the Palestinian people. They're the ones actually trying to solve the problem. They're the ones that have given up land. They're the ones that have given up space. They're the ones that have given up so much over the years, even after great victories when all their neighbors were trying to destroy them to try and make peace. What I think has happened is we've seen a tipping point where Israel said this far and no further. And I think we're going to see a different kind of war. I think we're going to see casualties that we don't want to see. And we're going to see numbers flashed in front of us all the time. This many Palestinians have died. Why? because they want to make the state of Israel look like it's not defending itself, but that it's the aggressor. In this case, it is absolutely not the aggressor. A nation has the right, like a household, to actually defend itself. And they should do so aggressively, and they should do so as promptly as possible. Now, this anti-Semitism that has come up across the nation, this has been brewing for a really, really long time, and now it's just out in the open. What you notice is a lot of these protests involve a lot of young people. Actually, in LA, an older Jewish man was killed during a pro-Palestine protest. He was pushed over, hit his head on the concrete, and was rushed away in a hospital, and the protesters just kept protesting. They put this guy in a stretcher right in the middle of the protest and put him in the ambulance, and he died on the way to the hospital. Now, that is the level of discourse that this ideology has. The dangerous part about this is any group of people, any diaspora people, and what I mean by diaspora is people that don't live in their native country but still hold strong to their original values for the most part, or can be easily labeled, right? So it can be easily labeled as a diaspora group. Whenever things go to hell in a handbasket, whenever things get really, really bad, and you don't know what the problem is, take the Weimar Republic in Germany. Take Spain in the Middle Ages. Take Rome, when Rome lit on fire. Every single one of those times, the Jews were expelled. Why? They're a diaspora people, and if the people in power are incompetent, evil, or just producing results that the people start to get angry about, they don't want to be the enemy. So what they'll do is they'll find people to make the enemy. Now, what you're not going to hear from houses of power in the United States or any other Western nation is, oh, those Jews are bad. You're not going to hear that. What you're going to hear is that information getting disseminated down into universities, down into all the institutions that are held by the far left. And the funny thing is about this is most Jews in the United States, most liberal Jews in the United States, and I don't mean classical liberal, I mean leftist liberal, have voted for Democrats in the past, have continued to vote for Democrats in the past, and these are the very same people that are stirring up hatred against the Jews. And why does that happen? They're not openly saying, hey, we hate the Jews, and you guys should all as well, except for one Harvard professor who recanted after that, which means nothing. He just wanted to keep his job. What they're saying is they hate the idea of God. Again, they hate the idea of God, and they're trying to destroy the idea of God himself so that they can become gods. That's what secular humanism does, and that's where it ends. That's the difference between the American Revolution and the French Revolution. The French Revolution was based on secular humanism, Rousseauan ideas that human beings can become super people, the human beings can do it all on their own. And what happened? Every group that came into power, they started cutting off their heads. The original revolutionaries, many of them got their heads cut off. It was a bloodbath, and it always ends in a bloodbath because human beings think the end justifies the means every single time. When you look at the American Revolution, which was situated in more of a deistic view, or a view at least that God was actively involved in history, and many of the people that were involved in the conflict, and many of the signers, three-quarters of the signers of the Constitution were members of churches. And when I say members of churches, back then, you actually had to sign a covenant. You were in a church and people asked you about your character. You weren't just like, I go on Sundays. Like, they were actually in churches. The difference is God kept them accountable. If all that accountability goes out the window with secular humanism and Marxism, people start to get lined up on walls. And don't think it can't happen here. Don't think it can't happen here. When you look at places like what's happening in Israel, how fast did that happen? How fast did the Ukraine-Russia conflict actually start? It was brewing for 3 or 4 years, but how fast did it actually start? How quickly were people out on the streets protesting Jews? And now we have a man actually dead in Los Angeles. How fast do things like this happen? How fast does the mob actually turn when God doesn't actually keep them accountable? So To wrap it all up, if we're going to talk about Israel and Hamas, what you need to see as a Christian is the spiritual conflict that's taking place. The spiritual conflict that's taking place is that Yahweh introduces himself to a man named Abraham, right? And these are the descendants of Abraham. Abraham becomes the servant of God. He's the forefather of all the Jews. The idea of God is reestablished after the Garden of Eden through the line of Abraham. In order to eradicate that idea, the principalities and powers that be, the ideas, and when we say ideas, we mean either demonic or not. When we say ideas, they want to eradicate them because they need to eradicate the idea of Yahweh in order to take full control. And don't think that an open border is going to work for us with terrorists leaking in through the South. And don't think that they want peace with us. What this God wants is complete eradication of Christianity and Judaism. Complete eradication to remove the idea of God. Because as long as that idea exists, it's got the seed of freedom in it. The seed of freedom is really in the scripture. Any ideas of real established democracies, republics that are successful have the seed of the gospel in them and have God overseeing the entire thing, almost like the fourth branch of government. If you remove that in the United States, in the family, in the church, and if you remove the state of Israel, then they're closer to their goal. They'll never succeed. They won't succeed. And stop thinking that they actually will succeed, because the reality is God is not going to be mocked by this, and God is actually going to come out on top in every single circumstance and situation. Now, in some cases, it won't be in your lifetime. If things get sour, now the reason we're fighting and the reason I'm talking about things like this is because I still think there's a chance for this country. There's still a chance for us. But I need you to realize that we're actually at war. And what's happening around the world are just the beginning. It's just the little tremors that are taking place before the return of Christ, whether it's in 100 years or in 1,000. But remember the enemy's objective. It is not just to destroy the landmass that is Israel. It is to destroy the idea of God and the Jewish people completely. And that's why you're seeing these protests at home as well. So speak out, use your voice, but more than anything, within your areas of responsibility and with your family, when it comes to your church, make sure that you're opening your mouth. Make sure that you're coming from an angle of truth, and make sure that you actually know what you're talking about when it comes to these things. And don't waste your time wrestling with people online when it comes to ideologies. Just continue to do the right thing.